You know, I don't think that's that funny, to be honest with you. I think I'm instructional and direction adverse. I don't know. I just like to jump in. Anybody else just like to jump in? I know it's probably just guys. It's not just guys. Let's be honest. How many of us just like to start? You don't like to read the instructions. You just start on things. Yes. See, there you go. That's because, you know what? Directions are for people who don't like to do it right the first time. All right? That's what directions are for. And directions are for people who, have never experienced or don't want to ever experience the joy of reassembling something. All right? There's a lot of fun that comes in that. We take it apart and we have to figure out, oh, man, I did it wrong. I have to start over. Directions are for people who are just too busy to start over. That's what I really think. We got a lot of time on our hands. And so I'm that person. I just like to start. And oftentimes Julie will be like, no, we ought to read the instructions. I'm like, come on. I've got this, Julie. Come on, I've got this. I got this. And we all need to read the instructions. And, before long, it takes way longer than it should have because I didn't read the instructions. And, sometimes you put things together and the parts don't fit right. And so when you try to take them apart and they don't come apart, and then you break something and you go to the store and I'm like, do you have this part? They didn't give it to me. She's like, that is such a lie. You broke it. That actually didn't happen to me. But I've watched some of you who have done that. I've stood behind you at the hardware store. Maybe you're the kind of parent who, if you are a parent who, waits till the last minute on Christmas Eve to put toys together. Anybody ever done that? Because, for the kids in the room, kids, Santa gets them about halfway and then he brings them to your house, and parents and grandparents and uncles and aunts, everybody has to jump in and finish them, And so, you're kind of like, come on, let's go. The sun's about ready to come up. Because you didn't read the instructions. And so it could have been so much easier. And if anybody had this conversation on, Christmas morning, we're like, honey, I know that, all your friends' Barbie doll houses have roofs. I just thought that, you'd like the open air concept. I mean, it's a new idea. Or, maybe you've bought a gas grill in a box. Anybody ever done that before? Don't ever do that, all right? Just buy the one on display. It's a lot easier because the conversation kind of goes like this. You get home and you're like, honey, I know it says gas grill, all right? But we're gonna go old school with this because I don't think you want to hook gas up to something I've assembled, all right? And so, what we're going to do over these next few weeks is, we've all had the experience of putting something together and having to take it apart and reassemble it because we did it the wrong way. And that's okay if it's a gas grill. That's okay if it's a Barbie house. But it's not okay if it's your life, right? And so, this series Do-Over, which we're beginning today, we do believe that everybody deserves a second chance. But, the bigger question is, how can we assure that the next time is not like the last time? Whether you're just exiting a relationship or maybe you've just gotten out of a marriage and you're looking to get remarried, or you just lost your job, or maybe you just flunked out of school. Do-overs can be completely your fault. Do-overs can be completely other people's fault. And let's be honest, they're always other people's fault, right? I mean, they're never really our fault, right? I mean, listen, we don't say amen at this church, but you can say amen to that. I mean, that's, because, even when we think that it's our fault, we like to assume that it's somebody else's fault. And so it doesn't matter if the do-over that's needed is your fault or it's because of something someone else created. You got bumped out of that job, or, maybe you deserve to be let go, or, maybe you flunked out, or maybe the teacher just had it in for you and you're just like, there was no way I was going to pass that class. Or maybe the relationship just didn't work and you're trying to figure out how much of it is you, how much of it is them. Whatever it is, if you need a do-over, let me tell you what, this series over the next 4 weeks is going to be for you. All right, you need to decide right now. You need to say, hey, I'm going to be here each of the next 4 weeks. And the reason I'm so excited about this series is, listen, I get a front row seat, all right, to watch lots and lots of people do all kinds of things in their life. And sometimes it just breaks my heart. I sit back and I watch people do the same thing over and over. I'm like, oh, you've already made that mistake. And that's easy, right? It's always easier to look at somebody else's life. We've all done that before. And you can pick everything out that they're doing wrong. It's harder when it comes to our life. But when you're a pastor, sometimes I just want to call a big time out for the whole world. I'm like, can we just stop? And can we just understand a couple core things that are going on right here? Because if you do a few certain things right the next time, you can assure that you won't experience the things you did the last time. And so, here's what makes this so interesting. Here's what I've noticed, all right? I've noticed that we learn from the mistakes in our lives that matter the least. Have you ever noticed that? Like you're trying a new board game or something, and you're like, oh, man, that was a bad move. I'll never do that again. You learn from that, right? I mean, sports, you're trying a new sport. You're taking some lessons, and you're like, oh, that didn't work. I'm going to try this stance now. You learn from that. You know, texting. Remember when you first started texting, and you're like, oh, I didn't realize I just hit this button, and it goes out to a whole bunch of people. Or Twitter. Remember Twitter? You're like, I love you. And you're like, I just think I told the world that I love them. Or you're like, you know, enjoyed last night. Oh. That went to everybody. Who did, you know, and you have those moments and you're like, all right, I learned from that. That's not going to happen. You know, we learn in the areas that matter the least, but we repeat the mistakes in the areas that matter the most, right? Financially, you know, relationally, in our marriages, with our kids, in our work life, in our academic life, you know, and we repeat the same mistakes over and over, and we suffer some of the same consequences, and then we ask ourselves this all-important question, and the question is this: when will I learn, right? How many of you have asked that before? When will I learn? And there's a really important word in that question, right? You know what the important word is? It's the word I. All right, because here's what I've discovered. Here's what I've noticed, that, you know, the common denominator in all of your mistakes is you. You ever thought of that? All right, because you have a way of following yourself around. All right, and so when you find yourself making a mistake, guess who's the common denominator? It's you. You're always there. All right, and so you know, for years and years, I've watched people, and I've counseled people, and, you know, I don't do as much of that anymore, but I've thought, you know, man, we just make the same mistakes over and over, and so, you know, I see people make unnecessary mistakes, you know, bad decisions, and here's kind of my thing. I've said before, many times before, I said, you know, life has enough unavoidable pain already, right? I mean, you can make all the right decisions, you can be really wise, and yet you're still going to experience some amount of pain in life, and so why in the world would we do things that cause more pain that ultimately could be avoided? Right? I mean, relationally and financially and, you know, in our work life and in our school life. And sometimes it just breaks my heart because I see people, I'm like, man, that one right there, that actually could have been avoided. So, you know, as we talk about this idea over the next 4 weeks of getting a do-over, next week I'm going to give you three in a row. I'm going to give you three things that are critically important that if you do 1, 2, and 3, you will actually allow the next time to not be like the first time, all right? And so to kind of get us set up for that today, I want to give you three myths. All right, and as soon as I put these myths on the screen, I mean, these are ways that will help us maybe get past repeating our mistakes. And as soon as I put these up, you're going to be like, well, of course, Kurt. I mean, that's a no-brainer right there because these are common sense things. It's just that sometimes we need somebody else to point out the assumptions that are there because we kind of subconsciously operate out of these things. All right, so I'm going to give you three assumptions today. And then at the end of these three assumptions, I'm going to give you one verse of Scripture. All right, to apply to this. Now, if you're somebody who just loves Bible teaching and you're like, man, I love to dive into every single word, you're not going to like today. I'm just going to tell you right now. All right, now next week we'll dive in a lot deeper. Now, if you're somebody who really isn't into the Bible, you know, which we realize there's a lot of people who are every weekend who are just checking out God, I mean, you're probably going to love today. You're going to be like, man, this is like psychology right here. It's like my counselor. Well, you know, you're probably going to connect with this. And so I just want to make sure that we're on the same page when it comes to, you know, what it means and the things that are most important or that prevent us from, you know, doing something different when we get the shot at a do-over. All right, so three myths real quick. These are the things that drive people to bad decisions, probably drive you and myself as well at times to bad decisions. The first myth is called this. It's called the experience myth, all right, the experience myth. Here's what we say. We say, well, experience will make me wiser, right? I mean, in other words, we say, well, in light of what I just experienced, which I never want to go through again, now I'm a lot wiser. Let me tell you something. Experience does not make you wiser, all right? You know what it does? It makes you older. It makes you grumpier. It makes you lonelier. It makes you more bitter. It makes you more angry. It makes you more jealous. I mean, the list could go on and on. And the reason this is such a big deal is because so many times people say, well, you know, I don't need to learn anything. You know, I'll suggest a book to somebody or, hey, you ought to go read this. Like, I don't need to read that. I mean, I've had this experience. I won't repeat that. I just need to jump back into the game. And so we just need to realize that just because we've had one experience doesn't mean that we're going to be prepared for the next time being different than the first time. All right, so here's the key. with experience. Evaluated experience is what makes us wiser, right? Evaluated experience. You know, experiencing something isn't a guarantee that we're going to do things any differently the next time, right? But when you evaluate your experience, this is actually a game changer, right? Evaluated experience actually sets you up for success the next time. And so consequently, over the next 3 weeks, I'm going to give you some evaluation tools that will help you evaluate those areas of your life that you say, man, I need a do-over right now, and I need it to be different the next time than it was the first time, right? Another myth is this. It's called the know-better myth, all right? The know-better myth. We say, since I know better, then I'll do better. Yeah, exactly. You guys have said this, and some of you chuckle, but it's true, right? Because I know better, then I'll do better. Now, let me explain to you where I got the terminology on this one, all right? This actually came from my 12-year-old daughter. A couple months ago, we were talking about, you know, a situation going on at school, and we were talking about some stuff, and she said, you know, Dad, she said, kids at my school, now she's in, like, seventh grade, all right? This is a seventh grader. She said, you're not going to believe it. I'm like, try me. She says, Dad, there are kids at my school, and they know better. They know better, but they still keep making the same dumb mistakes. I just laughed. I said, Macy, that's not a kid thing. That's an everybody thing, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're 12 or if you're 50. You know, just because we know better doesn't equal or equate into doing better. And yet we have this assumption that, oh, I know what to do, so I'm going to do it. You know, remember when you were a kid, or if you're a parent today, you know, you're always building into your kids. You're saying things like, hey, do what's right. Do the right thing. Come on, do the right thing. Or don't do this, don't do that, but do the right thing. And what do your kids say? Or what did you say when you were a kid? I know, I know, I know, I know. Mom and Dad, listen, I know. Because I know, therefore I will do, right? And here's why this is so important. Because simply knowing better doesn't equate to us doing anything any different. The only thing that causes a trajectory change is when we evaluate our experience and we say, okay, I'm going to evaluate this and I'm going to change some of my behaviors in order to create a different result. This is why, you know, for some of us, you know, your last bad relationship kind of reflects your current bad relationship. And your current bad relationship probably reflects, you know, what your next bad relationship is going to look like. And you just keep thinking, what's wrong with these people? What am I doing? Well, here's what's wrong. A couple things, let me tell you. Number one, you picked them, all right? All the bad people that they keep going south with, you picked them. And you're a bad picker, all right? You just pick really, really bad. And if you're the one being picked, you need to learn to say no, all right? Just because you're being picked doesn't mean that's a good thing for you. And you're like, but I've learned. I've had a bad experience. I had one person, and I'm never going to date that person again, or I'm never going to marry that kind of person again. And yet, your friends are going, man, they're walking down the same path. They said they've learned. They haven't learned anything. They keep doing the same things over and over. See, just because you know better doesn't mean you're going to do better. Because knowing better doesn't equate to, you know, having self-control or having strength to make a different choice, right? So knowing and doing are two totally separate things. Third myth is this. It's a time myth, all right? Time. And this is the toughest one, all right? This is the one where, you know, we'll say, well, time is against me. I hear that all the time. Kurt, time is against me. Time, you know, time is ticking. You know, the ships are, you know, there may be no more ships that come my way. And so we begin to say, time is my enemy, right? And we say, you know, opportunities are coming and opportunities are going. You know, opportunities keep coming. I can't just keep passing them by. There may be no more opportunities. This may be the last ship. And so we say things like, you know, I've had a bad experience. I think I'm ready to jump back in. I'm ready to get back in the saddle. I'm ready to, you know, re-log in, to repost my profile on, you know, eHarmony. I'm ready to get back in the game, back on the market, you know, whatever it is. And let me tell you what, when we begin to buy into this, all of this is absolutely false, right? Time is not our enemy. In fact, one of the wisest things someone once told me was, Kurt, time is actually your friend. Right? Time is always your friend. There's things that happen over time that will continue to affirm or disaffirm what you think you need to do. Time is always your friend. Right? And I get it. I get it. If you're in a place where you feel like, man, things are passing me by, and that might be the last ship that just came by, you know, I get it. I feel like we feel the opposite. We feel like the clock is ticking. You know, I'm down to the last couple grains in the hourglass that are about to, you know, it's about to expire. But time is your friend, right? And we have to believe that. If we want the next time to be different than the last time, we have to believe that in any transition in our life, from the first time to the second time, you know, in every arena of life, every area of life, wherever you need a do-over, that time will actually be your friend, not your enemy, right? And here's why. Here's why. Because when you've gone through something difficult, all right, whether you created that situation, whether you chose that situation, whether someone else created that situation for you, the truth is when you've gone through something really, really tough, you're a bit out of balance, right? And before you make another big life decision, you need to find balance. Right? You need to find equilibrium. Because what happens is our emotions are kind of like our temperature. All right, our emotions reflect our temperature. And so when our emotions are high, you know, when we're angry and jealous and bitter and we're really raging, our emotional temperature goes up. And one of the things I've discovered is our temperature doesn't go down as quickly as it goes up. And so, you know, this is very similar to our physical body, right? When there's something wrong going on in our physical body, if an illness, something that our body needs to fight up, our temperature goes up. And it's a sign that there's something, you know, a bit out of whack inside of us. Right? This is why, when we're facing a big decision, if our temperature's up, if we're angry, if we're bitter, if we're jealous, whatever it might be, we've got to wait for our temperature to go down. Because here's the thing, whether emotionally or physically, it's both the same. You become very self-absorbed when you're in pain. Right? When you're in pain, you become very self-absorbed. Now, it's not your fault, right? This is what naturally happens, but you become very self-absorbed. It's like if you have ever had a migraine or know somebody who has migraines, right? When somebody has a migraine, the last thing you want having happen in that moment is for somebody to say, hey, could you come help me with this? Or can I ask you a difficult question? You know, you just want to be by yourself. You just want to take care of your pain. Why is that? It's not because you don't love the people that are coming to you. It's not that you don't want to interact with them. It's just that you're so self-absorbed with whatever you're dealing with right here in the moment, and that's the nature of pain. It causes us to be self-absorbed, right? And emotional pain is the same. It's just that we don't notice it very often. So emotional pain causes us to be self-absorbed as well. Now, let me tell you where you've seen this, all right? You've seen this all over the place. But, you know, some of you are in a Life Together group around here. You're in a community group. And there's probably people in your group that have had some really difficult things going on in their life recently. And you know, when people are going through difficult things, here's what happens. Every small group setting, all right, it doesn't matter what you could be talking about. Hey, isn't it beautiful outside? And somehow that conversation turns into their pain, right? Anybody know what I'm talking about? All right, you have people in your life, and you'll go through an hour session, and you'll come back the next week, and you'll be talking about something different. All of a sudden, it's about that person's pain again. And every week, you know what that person does? They walk out, and they're like, man, that group was really good. Man, I got a lot out of that. And everybody's going, oh, my word. I mean, all you did was talk about yourself. Why is that? It's because we become absorbed, self-absorbed, when we're in pain. And this is all a part of the healing process, right? And so jumping into what is next before we're allowed to bring our temperature down, to kind of cool down, before you get your equilibrium, before you get your balance, is a very, very dangerous thing. Because here's what else I've discovered. When you're healthy, you have clarity. And when you have clarity, you make better decisions, right? And if you don't have clarity, then you have no business making big decisions right now, all right? Time is your friend. You need to give it time. And some of you, I know some of you are hearing this morning, and you're kind of like, Kurt, like, man, Kurt, if you just let me come up and take a microphone and I could share my story with everybody, man, you'd see that my story is so much different, which we're not going to do that, by the way. I know, but some of you, you know, when I meet with you, you're like, Kurt, if I could just take 10 more minutes to explain my story to you, you'd see that, man, you know, and here's the thing. All right, here's the thing. And I hate to tell you this, but I need to tell you this. Some of you are going to be offended by this. But here's the thing. Your circumstances may be unique, but you're not. All right? Your challenges might be unique, but listen, you're not. All right? You know, as I hear people's stories, they all fall into about four or five categories. Everyone is very similar. It just seems like a big deal to you because it's going on in your life right now. Right? I mean, if you're in pain, you're like, your whole life is about this painful breakup or this painful separation from your employer, whatever it might be. And here's the thing, that's a big deal right now, but you know, it's not unique. All right? It's not unique. It's actually very common. and I love you, and God loves you, and your community group loves you, and your life together group loves you, and your parents, man, they're trying to love you. And your brother, you know, you might be calling your brother, and he's not answering the phone. He's like, man, every time she calls me, it's just the same story over and over. You know, everybody's trying. It's just that before you jump in again, you need to step back and say, okay, what needs to happen right now? How do I need to cool down in order for the next time to be better than the first time? All right, so as I was thinking through this, and I'm thinking, you know, there is so much that we could say on this topic, but, you know, I wonder if there's any illustrations from the Bible on this, right? I mean, you know, because we're at church, we probably should get to that here eventually. So, you know, so listen, I started looking, there's tons of stories, and there's tons of stories throughout the Bible. There's so many, and we're not really going to teach through all of these over the next few weeks, you know, but it's fascinating because, you know, it's interesting how God uses people when they have a first time, and they have a failure, and then they have a second time, all right? And so every time you see one of these stories, whether it be Old Testament or New Testament, you know, there's somebody that had a first time, a failure, and a second time. And one of the biggest figures that we probably know is a guy by the name of Moses, right? Moses was adopted into the palace of Pharaoh in the nation of Egypt, and he lived with the rulers. But one of the things that was unique about him is he was not an Egyptian. He was a Hebrew. And so he looked at himself one day, and he's like, well, I walk like an Egyptian, and I talk like an Egyptian, but I'm not an Egyptian. I'm Hebrew. And so as he grew up, he began to get a burden for the Hebrew people in the Egyptian community because the Hebrew people were in slavery. And this began to kind of not set well with him. And so one day, he began to do something about it. And he actually got in a fight with another Egyptian, and he killed the guy. And when that happened, he had to leave the kingdom. Well, you know, it was a number of years later. He's off the scene for a while. A number of years later, Moses comes back for a second time. And this is where he's made into the ruler of the entire Israelite nation. And this is what made Moses famous. All right, so he had a first time, he had a failure, and then he had a second time. King David, kind of the same story. King David was kind of anointed to be king of Israel. And King David goes and he begins to live with Saul, who is the king. Now, David, man, he has got it going on. I mean, David is handsome. David, you know, he's got all kinds of leadership skills. He's got mad leadership skills. And all of a sudden, Saul, who's the current king, begins to get jealous of this David who's anointed to be the next king. And so Saul kicks David out of the kingdom. Saul goes away. A number of years later, David comes back and eventually he becomes the king of Israel. In the New Testament, probably the most famous example is the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul is a guy who was a very, very, you know, religious person. He's somebody who's, you know, following every religious law. He's a Pharisee. He's a guy who, you know, completely devoted his life to God. He didn't even get married. He's like, I'm devoting everything that I have just to God. And he even says this one day. He says, I'm going to defend and honor God in a way that nobody else is doing. I'm going to kind of start getting rid of all these silly Christians. I mean, they're not really religious people. So he goes out and he starts to kill Christians. And then eventually God knocks him off his mule. And Paul is gone for a while, all right? He disappears for a while, and then he reappears with a new faith, and he's really a different person. And the Apostle Paul that we know, that we read about in the New Testament, in fact, Paul begins to pen, he penned like more of the New Testament than any other figure. In fact, you know, he began to plant churches all across the Mediterranean rim, and we're a result of that. I mean, planting churches has trickled down through centuries, and we, you know, did the same thing. And so, you know, I could go on and on looking at these figures in the Bible, in the New Testament, the Old Testament, and the unique thing about all these stories, there's something you're going to hate about them. I hate this thing about them. And see, in every instance, in the New Testament and in the Old Testament, there was a first round, and there was a second round, and there was an interval of years in the middle. Years. Right? Not days, not weeks. Years. For Moses, it was like 40 years that he was out before he came back for round two. 40 years, that's encouraging, right? Some of you are like, 40 years, my word. You know, for David, we don't know exactly, you know, it's referenced somewhere between 8 and 12 years that he disappeared before he came back and he becomes the king for round two. You know, for the Apostle Paul, he says at one point, he says, I was away for 14 years before God began to do this thing in me. And here's the interesting thing. Here's why I'm telling you this morning. All right, there's two things that emerged in all of these figures' lives that I want you to experience. All right, see, in this gap between the first and the second, there's something that happens. And here's what happens. They, one, get a divine sense of destiny, and two, they develop an abiding humility. So a divine sense of destiny and abiding humility. And as I think about that, listen, I've watched hundreds of people through the years, you know, go through a first experience and a failure and then, you know, a second experience really well. And I've watched, you know, hundreds of people go through a first experience and not learn from it, go through a second experience and go through a third experience and not navigate it well. And here's what I've always noticed, and I've tried to apply this to my own life, and I felt the same way, that in that in-between time, in that time between the first experience and the second experience, there's always way more time than we're comfortable with. And we see this in all these figures in the Bible, right? There's always way more time between the first and the second, but when we take the time to hit the pause button, to allow the temperature to go down, to get a bit of health, a bit of equilibrium back, we always emerge with a greater sense of purpose and an abiding humility. In fact, when I talk to people that have gone through this, I've said this myself. You know, people go through something, they're like, man, God is just doing something in my life. I can't explain. I mean, God is up to something big in my life. And if you're a Christian, you've probably said that. If you know Christians, you've probably heard them say that. If you're not a Christian, you've probably heard some goofy Christian go, oh, man, God's doing something big. And you're like, oh, that's just goofy talk. You know, but this is what happens. When we allow God to use the gap, you know, we come away from that and we say, man, I would have never chosen that in the world. I would have never gone through that experience if I had my choice in it. But I tell you what, now that I've gone through it, I wouldn't trade it for the world. Or maybe, you know, you got let go at work and you're like, man, they kicked me out. I mean, they just let me go. I was going to become a partner. And then all of a sudden, they sell the company and I have no future. I have no job. I have no way to provide for my family. And as you go through that, listen, I've heard people come out of that on the other side and say, I tell you what, I wouldn't go through that again in my life if I had to choose it, but I wouldn't trade it for anything because of what God has taught me. And as those people emerge and they hit the pause button, they begin to lean into what God might be doing in that moment, they begin to walk out of that with a divine sense of destiny and an abiding humility. Let me tell you what, that is not natural. That is not natural. That is not the norm. But it does happen, and I want that for you, and here's why. Here's why. Because you may be this morning sitting here thinking, man, I need a major do-over in this part of my life. Or you might be thinking, man, Kurt, I don't have anything I need a do-over in right now. Well, here's the thing. You will at some point, all right? And so whether you're in a season needing a do-over or you've got one coming down the road, you might as well get it right the first time. What I mean by getting it right, you might as well allow God to redeem that first experience, that first time. All right, and when I say redeem, I mean to add value to that situation. Instead of walking away from that failed marriage, failed relationship, flunking out of school, you know, lost job, whatever it is, and just saying, man, that was a waste of my life. That was a waste of 5 years of my life. You know, when we allow God into those moments, into the gap between the first and the second, he begins to bring out growth in that gap so the second time is different than the first time. And so I want to give you one verse today. All right, one verse. And next week, we're going to look at some other passages. But I want to leave you with a verse. And if you grew up in church, you probably heard this verse. In fact, you've probably heard it misquoted a lot of times. If you didn't grow up in church, you've probably heard this verse. You just didn't realize it was from the Bible. All right? And so this came from the Apostle Paul, who had a pretty big first round, and then a failure, and then even a bigger second round, 14 or so years later. All right, so that's the backdrop for this verse right here. And so keep that in mind. Paul's writing to Christians in Rome, and here's what he said. He said, and we know, which means we have confidence in this. He says, and we know that in all things, which means all circumstances, which means no matter what's happened, no matter what you've done, no matter what's been done to you, the Apostle Paul's saying, hey, I'm telling you, regardless of how big that event was, God's grace is bigger than that event. So he says, we know that in all things, and check these next two words out, he says, God works. This is so powerful right here. He says, we know in all things, God works, which means that if we want to get this right, if we'd had a first time, or maybe we're sitting right after a first time right now in the gap between the next time, God says, man, if you'll just hit the pause button for just a moment, if you'll just allow me to enter into the gap right there, he says, I can work right there. I can do something right there. The Apostle Paul says, God can work and use all things. And this is what we're going to talk about over the next 3 weeks, all right? And here's my opinion. My opinion that is if you do not allow God to work at redeeming the last thing, that thing will continue to pop up in your future. If you don't work through that last thing, it's going to continue to rear its ugly head in your future, all right? And so, you know, the only way we get past the last thing and make sure the next thing's not like the last thing is we surrender that to God and we begin to say, God, I want you to teach me. I want you to grow me. I want to put the pause on for just a moment so that I can maybe assure, do some things different, evaluate my behavior so the next time is different than the last time. And then he goes on. He says, and we know that in all things, God works for those, the good of those who love him, which is basically saying, God, I want your way more than my way. I want to do your will more than what I want in this situation. And then, so he says, and we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love them. And here's how he completes it. And all who have been called according to his purpose. This is so big right here. He's basically saying, hey, if I've got a plan for you. And I know there was a bad first time, and I know you're sitting in the failure of the second time, but I'm going to do something in the middle. And I've seen it hundreds of times. Some of you have experienced it. Some of you are sitting there thinking, there's no way. Let me tell you what. You know, if you're sitting here thinking, Kurt, my story is so different. There's no way God can use the last time to bring out any kind of good for the next time. Listen, there's a Heavenly Father who can leverage your past. And he can leverage your experience if you allow him to. And when we invite God into the gap after the first failure, God says, I will use that and I will grow you and I will take you to an entirely different place. Beginning chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4. And here's the thing. It only happens if we put on the pause. You know, if we say, I'm not going to jump right in. I'm going to allow God, I'm going to allow my temperature to go down a bit. I'm going to see what God wants to do in this time of waiting. And see, if we don't do that, then it's quite possibly you'll go through round 2, and then you'll go through round 3, and you'll go through round 4, and you'll never learn, and you'll never grow. And we care way too much about you to let you do that. So the good news is the next time can be different than the first time. Not just because you want it to, but because we plan on it becoming that way. So as we kind of wrap up this morning, I want us to do that. I want us to plan in these next few moments. I want you to take out your connection card. And on the back side are some next steps. We give these to you every single weekend. And I want you to plan on how next time is going to be different than the last time. You know, whatever's been going through your mind today. And that might just be saying, hey, I'm going to commit to being here each of the next 3 weekends because I want to walk through these 3 steps that will help me get a plan for the next time to be different than the last time. You know, maybe you want to just start focusing on Romans 8:28 this week. Meditate on that daily and say, God, what are you saying to me through this? Or maybe, you know, there's a major decision you're facing right now. Maybe you're still broken from a previous, you know, relationship or a marriage, and you're just like, I need to get back. Maybe what God's saying is just put the pause button on for a moment. See what I can do in the gap to assure that the next time is different than the first time. So go ahead and mark your step, whatever your step might be, and let me pray for you as you do that. God, thank you so much, not only for being God, but for being a God of second chances and third chances and fifth chances and tenth chances. And God, you're a God of as many chances as we need till we finally come to that place of saying, God, I'm gonna throw up my hands and I'm just gonna begin to trust that there's something you can do in my life that will cause the next time to be different than the first time. And so, Father, you know, wherever this lands for us this morning, give us the wisdom to know what to do with it, the courage to take the steps we're identifying right now. And Father, I just pray that in these next few weeks, God, there'd be a whole bunch of us, who are willing to hit the pause button just long enough to allow you to complete the work that you're already doing in us right now. God, we didn't sign up for the circumstances we've been through. We didn't choose them. But God, we do see that you're a God who can do something with them and make the next time different than the first. So God, my prayer of these next 3 weeks is, God, that you would teach us, even right now, God, help us to even right now begin to trust you as we wait and as we anticipate what you want to do between the last time and the next time.
We're going to sing a song that comes right out of that Romans 8:28. In the song it says that you make, God makes all things work together for our good.